You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily, well, this week daily, I promise you, Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network. I'm your host, Matt Moore, joined by Adam Mares as we recap one of the a win so big we needed a day to recover from it for the Denver Nuggets. We'll bring that to you. We'll talk the implications of beating the Clippers, how they beat the Clippers, Jokic's performance, Michael Porter Jr., Kompaza's big three, all of it in this episode, as well as what are we going to learn from this run from the Denver Nuggets with this particular roster and construction. We'll get into all that and more. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. All right, Adam. So last night, the Denver Nuggets took on the Los Angeles Clippers. No Jamal Murray, no Will Barton, no Monte Morris. Oh, and guess who came back for this one? Kawhi Leonard just pops right off of that injury report and decides to play. And yet, the Nuggets took care of the Clippers.
So it's funny that Kawhi came back, because there was a game going into it where you thought, is this important? Did either team want to win? You know, what do you want here? But I actually feel weirdly like the Clippers treated that game a little bit like a measuring stick game for them. I feel like they wanted to see what they had and how they looked against Denver. And I got to say, Denver looks so comfortable against this Clippers team, which is really strange, because I think most people have the Clippers as better than Denver, but it was such an impressive win from Denver's perspective, the way they did it, the confidence with which they played, all of it, that it does make me wonder, is this a good matchup for Denver? Are the Clippers a good matchup? I saw a lot of that on the timeline last night.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can make the argument. If I was making the Clippers argument, it would be this. It'd be like, look, no Ibaka, so we can go small, which is like, we want to try and go small versus Jokic, even though I think you and I both agree, not a great idea. Probably helps trying to outscore them, though. Like, maybe that's the tactic without Jamal Murray.
And 104 Barton. Points. And a lot of those were Rondo and Boogie at the end. I mean, they were at 90 points about with the game with 3-4 minutes to go.
So that's interesting. I want to get that in a second. But like, okay, Kawhi's still on the minutes restriction, right? So like, you know, not a fully healthy one, but it's also like, your guys, look at the season. Look around you, Helen. We're at the threshold of hell. You're not going to be totally healthy this season. Like, get over that hope. But like, I think the reality is that for whatever reason, and I'm like, I will say this, like, I think Ty Lue is a good coach. I think what Ty Lue did with the Cavs was good in terms of managing egos and getting buy-in. Ty never like blew me away X's and O's wise. Like,
really?
He never blew me away. Like, the offensive stuff that the Cavs run was mostly a stress test. It was mostly like, we're going to put so much pressure on you with LeBron and Kyrie, and we're going to have so much spacing with these shooters, and we're going to have Tristan, that you're going to have to break at some point. And like, LeBron's greatness carried him through. I always tend to like lean towards coaches. Like, you know this, like, I lean towards coaches. Ty never really blew me away, especially on the defensive end. Like, the Cavs' only year that they were good defensively was 2016, and the rest of those years, they really were garbage. Now, I'm working on a thing right now for Action Network, talking about how, and like, I've come to this from talking with you on this podcast, so I'm like really grateful for it. It's not about how good your defense is. That doesn't matter. It's about, can you solve the problems in front of you?
Yep, totally.
I think
I'm telling you, this is what defense is about. This is what actually is good defense. Can you solve the most problems?
And I think the issue is, for the Clippers, they do not have a way to solve Jokic because of both their personnel and their scheme. I think you could probably find ways over the course of a 7-game series to do it. But even then, it's going to be real, you know, touch and go. And you're going to have to hope that Michael Porter Jr. doesn't have a good series. And you're going to have to hope that you get good minutes from your bench, because Denver's bench is playing out of its mind right now, all the way through. Really strong performance and incredible. Like, I mean, I don't have anybody on the team that you can really look at and go, like, they did not play well. I don't know who didn't play well on the Nuggets yesterday.
right? And that's part of what's so impressive about this team is they've had to go to the mattresses, you know, so to speak, with all the injuries, and it's really brought them together, it seems. I mean, this team really does play for each other. You're right that nobody played well. I do think guys could play better offensively. I mean, Austin Rivers continues to miss shots. PJ Dozier even continued. I mean, he made a lot of his mid-range buckets, and those were big ones, but he continued to miss shots at the rim that you kind of want him to make. So there were guys that could make more shots, but just in terms of, are you doing the job that is expected of you? Everybody's doing it right now, and it's really, really impressive.
So you mentioned the numbers. I want to bring this up because, like, I honestly don't know how to put this in perspective. I think it's easier if you're somebody that doesn't necessarily pay attention to metrics, right? But you, obviously I am, if you listen to this podcast. So here's what's interesting, because Malone was talking, and he was like, 104 points versus that team is really, really good. And it felt like this real grinded out slugfest type game. Like, that's how it felt watching it. But, like, the numbers wise, like, the Clippers had a 118 offensive rating. They scored 118 points per 100 possessions in that game.
I wonder what it is, though, man, if you cut out, I know you can't do this because you take the whole game, but I wonder if you cut out the first 4 minutes and last 4 minutes, because they opened the game 7 of 7 and they closed it with a barrage of Boogie and Rondo threes, which it's, I'm not saying those don't count. They do count. Mm-hmm. But if you're the Clippers, if you're on the Clippers side of this, are you saying, oh, well, we can count on those. Those things are going to happen. Yeah. I don't think so. I think what really matters was the in-between, the very start and very end of that game. And they did struggle.
And so as an example, in the second quarter, the Clippers had an 86.4 offensive rating in that quarter. And in the third quarter, it was only 113.
Okay.
Denver had a 134. I think the way the Nuggets, like... It's odd. I don't feel like the Nuggets are just like they don't grind it out the way that, like, John Wall's Wizards teams used to. Literally, like, he would take the full 8 seconds to get across the timeline. He would wait until there was 10 seconds on the clock. And then it was the thing that drove me, like, all the time. I'm like, you have John Wall. Why are you not trying to execute with, like, 15 on the clock and just, like, beat them with speed? This is nuts. The Nuggets, I think, really, what I love it is, like, I think they push to get into their set, but much like the 2014 Spurs, which you mentioned quite often, like, they do a really good job of, we're going to get into our set and we're going to be patient and we're going to work you until we get the shot we want. Like, if that takes 7 seconds, then we'll take 7 seconds. If that takes 23 seconds, then that takes 23 seconds. Mm-hmm. And that control, I think, is part of what morph some of the numbers to look differently. But I do think that Denver played outstanding defense at various points in this game. And you were absolutely right that the Boogie and Rondo numbers were definitely, like, swing numbers and probably aren't sustainable. I will say this, like, there's probably something to be said for the idea of maybe their best strategy, because they're at such a tactical disadvantage versus Jokic, is they do need, like, Rondo to do that stuff. And they do need to try and outscore the Nuggets with Cousins versus trying to get stops with Zubac, who, boy, did I make some folks mad last night with my Zubac takes, by the way.
Well, people just, I think, overstated Zubac's impact early in the season against Jokic. I mean, we've talked about this, I think, before. I've never considered that to be a guy that I'm like, oh, yeah, he's going to make anything difficult on Jokic. He's not. But I do think Cousins can, and not because I think Cousins is good, but physicality, it just gets officiated differently every single game. And last night he comes in late. You know, it wasn't necessarily a physical game. He comes in and injects some of that, and, you know, and I think got away with it. I think it's similar to Dwight Howard last year. He played like a goon all 5 games of that series. In 3 of them, he got away with it. In 2 of them, he didn't. And it's just, I think DeMarcus Cousins is going to have a similar effect if it were a playoff matchup. But that's neither here nor there, because I don't think these teams are matching up in the playoffs
until
the very end. I think more important for me is just the way that this team looked. And in particular, the way that second unit continues. I mean, Jokic, Porter, obviously fantastic. Aaron Gordon defensively. It's been a while since I thought he looked good defensively against an ace, but he goes up against a couple of them in that game, and I thought he looked great. But to me, the story is Paul Millsap continues to look like the best version of himself that we've seen over the last 2 years. I don't know if it's health or confidence or whatever, or just fitting into that role. Austin Rivers, Shaq Harrison, the defensive duo in the backcourt off the bench. Just that second unit really looks fantastic.
Yeah, they're playing great. Like, that run in the second quarter was – Like, honestly, like, if you look at this game and you can't, because, like, the end of the game mattered too. And I thought the Nuggets, like, traded blows with them enough. But, like, look, it really was the Nuggets won the second and third quarters. And that's why they won this game. Like, they were outscored by one in the first, had a really bad start. Starters played better in the second quarter, but really it was that run in the second quarter. And then the third quarter, again, by the starters, they played really well in that third quarter to get enough of a comfort lead to hold on versus the Rondo experience. I think they have a lot of defensive versatility, like with, you know, here's a good example. Shaq Harrison was 0 of 0 with two rebounds, one assist, and was a plus 12 in this game.
He had one of every stat. I mean, and I'll tell you what, it's funny that he only had one steal, because I went back and rewatched this game today.
Yeah.
He got his hand on the ball so many times.
Agree. Hard agree there. And actually, I could pull this up right now. Deflections in this game. Campazzo had 4 and Shaq Harrison had 4 in this game.
They were loud for Shaq Harrison for sure.
And those are big plays. The Jokic, like, absolute hammer, nail, coffin, post up, reads the defense, senses Rondo coming to the weak side, delivers an absolutely perfect pass into Campazzo's pocket. Campazzo hits his biggest shot of the season. At least that I can remember. Maybe there was another one.
He's had a couple. I mean, he had 3 threes in the fourth, a couple games back. So
I want to try and put this, like, outside the context of our usual, like, ha ha ha, Matt hates Campazzo stuff. Like,
okay.
I thought it was interesting that Campazzo hit that shot and it was absolutely massive. And it does prove that you can trust him in that situation to a degree. The turnovers were,
he had back-to-back turnovers right before that.
And they were like one was like a looping turnover that was, but
they were both F minus turnovers.
Yeah. But, like, again, like, he hits that shot. And so, like, I'm not saying I'm not facetiously saying that makes it okay. I'm saying, like, genuinely, like, look, the Nuggets are going to have turnovers. And with Malone, like, Malone understands that Campazzo's, it's very interesting because Malone hates turnovers. I think he minds them from Campazzo least of all.
Oh, I don't know. Of course, if every mistake from Campazzo, I think he minds less, fouls, missed shots, everything. Yeah. But here's what I would say from going back and rewatching the game. Okay. I'm surprised at how aggressive the Nuggets stayed in the final 4 minutes, because they had a pretty controlling lead of this game. It got close at the end because some of those threes, but Denver was actually up pretty comfortably with about 4 minutes to go. And they kept playing aggressive, some early shot clock shots, some driving. Both of those turnovers from Campazzo were just like trying to make something out of nothing when you didn't need to. There was time for him to like pull it out and keep it going. And I do worry about the Nuggets. Just logically, I worry about their ability in close games like that. Who is the guy if Barton and Monte are gone? Who do you run that two-man game with? But I'm not sure if last night was a perfect representation of it, because they made mistakes before they got to the two-man portion of it.
Yeah, well, also, I would say this, like, look, I do think that they're probably, I wonder if there's a message from the coaching staff to, like, let's stay aggressive, versus, you know, sometimes coaches will say that, but they don't mean it in that context. And, like, you have to have veterans. Yeah. Like, here's things, like, if Will Barton plays in that game, Will Barton's grabbing the ball and being like, no, all right, we're going to kill some clock here. Let's get a good shot. Monte, same deal. Like, Monte honestly has such a good sense for time and score. If you have any one of the three guards, that probably happens. And, like, look, that's, I'm not versed in your international basketball, but I do notice, like, there are some differences. And I think that's probably one of the differences in the NBA and international. So, like, I wonder if that's something that Campazzo is just going to have to, like, learn, like, hey, if you're up inside of like 90 seconds, we're burning clock. Like, we're basically trying to squeeze them. Look, this was just a phenomenal performance. And you're very big on and very good about staying in the moment. I just cannot tell you how much respect I have for this team.
That's it.
It's so tough for me because I cover the team and have covered it as long as anybody else. Like, Dempsey, I think, is the only one that has had a press credential before I did. And he left when I got here and then came back. It genuinely, so, like, there's this idea that I'm, like, in the bag for the Nuggets. Like, a lot of people think I'm a Nuggets fan.
Yeah.
But I'll just say this, like, No matter who it was, I would just be absolutely in awe of the amount of heart, professionalism, toughness, and just like sheer, it does, like, we're not going to let these things get to us, and we're not going to be helpless against you just because we're shorthanded. We have the MVP. We are all really good players, and you're not better than us. We can beat you. It doesn't matter. We can win. It's just basketball. We can win this game. We're going to win this game.
And trust in each other, and just, I mean, all of it, man. It's, they really have, they are a 100 out of 100 right now in this moment. I mean, there's more season to go, but they're a 101 out of 100 on a lot of those just team intangibles. And it's just, it's cool to see. That's why they've survived this 9-1 now since Murray went down. And by the way, I think they were 4-1 prior to Murray going down. Remember, without Murray, he came back for one game. He missed a little bit before that. So if you actually go, you could actually stretch this out, I think, to 13 or 14-2 without Murray over this stretch. So it's impressive. And there's a lot of things. I think I'm not sure if I'm saying I'm ready to buy the Nuggets as back to being like contenders to make it to the finals or this or that, but I'm way closer than I ever thought I was, especially 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Today's reaction and last night's reaction was very interesting. I thought from the national media and from various voices online, there is a sudden realization. I think before it was like, oh, that's a nice story. Like, look at them. Like, they survived the Murray injury. Like, that's what a good, like, good for them. Good for them for hanging in. Like, last night really was, and I'm going to curse a little bit here. So if you got kids in your car or whatever, get this for a minute. But like, it really was like, oh, the Nuggets are going to fuck you up. Like, if you try and drag them in, if you go in there thinking that they're a pushover, you are going to get absolutely hit in the mouth. They are not front runners. They are not a regular season team. They are not a team that just takes advantage of choice spots. Like, they are absolutely going to rumble with anybody they come across. Lakers, Mavericks, Blazers, Clippers, Jazz, Suns. You had better bring it. If you do not, if you think you can go, like, this is a good reminder. If you do not take this team seriously, they are going to beat you.
I think they might be even better than that, Matt. I mean, I think they might be a team that we look at and just say they might be capable of winning a bunch of different ways with this group. And I mean, we'll find out. They've got a more big test ahead of them, but the Clippers, they wanted that game. That game got under their skin and Denver still won it.
It was that first quarter very much felt like all right, we're going to show you.
Right.
And then they got hit with a bench run, and it was just like, yikes. So,
and
let's take a break.
Started hitting Sombor shuffles and to the bench and everything else.
Just cooked everybody. Let's take a break. After the break, I wanted to put the win in perspective in terms of what it means for the Western Conference playoff race. We'll also talk about Michael Porter Jr.'s performance. We can dig a little bit more into Jokic's another sublime game as well.
Jokic, Porter two-man game even.
We'll do that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, if you're the hiring expert for your company, what you really need is help making your short list of quality candidates. You need a hiring partner who helps make your life easier. You need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality short list of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications. And schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy with tools like Indeed Instant Match, giving you quality candidates whose resume on Indeed fits your job description immediately, and Indeed Skills Test that, on average, reduces hiring time by 27%. You can choose from more than 130 skills tests, then add your must-have requirements so you only pay for applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/locked, L-O-C-K-E-D. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/locked. Indeed.com/locked. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for making this part of your day. Matt Moore alongside Adam Mares, recapping the Nuggets' giant win versus the Los Angeles Clippers. We'll get into the implications of what this game meant. But first, you've done a rewatch. I have not. It was my son's birthday today, so that's what I did with my day. Very successful birthday. Adam, what did you notice from rewatching about Michael Porter Jr.'s performance?
Well, the number one thing to me, I'd say the number one thing is he just looked very confident. I mean, this was a game where they were clearly trying to get physical with him and had length that they could throw at him, but he just looked like he belonged. But the more interesting thing I think that I noticed was that he's really starting to develop, in my opinion, a nice chemistry, not just with Jokic, but with Jokic style offense. There was a lot of two-man game between them, and it wasn't, you know, the Murray Jokic two-man game where Porter would dribble it up and then you run pick and roll and back. It was within the flow of the offense. So not necessarily the first action, but running into a handoff and just making the right read. And sometimes that read was dragging the drop defender away from Jokic before delivering the pass. Little things like that, that, you know, show growth. It show him not just understanding, am I open? Is this guy open? But how can I get this guy open by maybe pulling another dribble this way or that way? And to me, that's the most encouraging thing. He was a zero at that, I think, to start. And he's so far along, even in these last 3 or 4 weeks of just learning how to play within the system to create things for other people. It was really impressive.
He was just locked in the whole way through. That baseline double clutch.
That's silly.
Like, those are the type of shots that the elite players in this league make. Like, those
horrible,
are the type of
shots. Horrible, horribly difficult shot, man.
And
drained it.
Just nailed it. Again, 10 of 16 from the field, 4 of 7 from 3, 7 boards, 5 assists to go in this one, 25 points. I mean, Porter was just magnificent. Jokic was incredible. Like,
another thing that stood out to me with Michael Porter, that second unit, especially in that second quarter when they made the run, he was extra aggressive in that stretch. And part of it was because he made his first two buckets. I mean, he comes out and immediately drains two shots. So I think it gave him confidence. But I like it. When you're not with Jokic, yeah, you do get to ramp it up another 10%.
Yeah, that's what he needs to do. He absolutely needs to, like that unit needs offense. They're gonna defend. Like,
yeah.
Get your shots up because you're the best option that they have. The other thing I will say that continues to catch guys off guard, I feel like the scouting report is having a really hard time assessing him in terms of he gets really quick, easy buckets. He gets putbacks.
Right,
he gets little duck ins. He gets handoff shots. He gets spot up. Like, the Nuggets do not, and this is like a real testament to both Jokic and the system they built around Jokic. The Nuggets do not make guys two dimensional. Like, they are not, nobody on that team is just like they do not run rocket stuff, you know, like D'Antoni's rocket stuff. Like, it is very dynamic. And I think that's difficult because if you're like, okay, we got to have somebody that can get over the screen to contest on him, it's got to be a guard that's fast enough, but also big enough to be able to contest on it. Even if you, and like, he still hit that one, that was a fadeaway. But also if you put him too small a guy on him, he's going to really hurt you on the offensive glass. If it's a guy that's like a high offensive weapon, like Paul George, he's going to have a hard time with all the cuts and that's going to wear you down. Like, he's just an extremely tough cover because of the number of ways that they use him and the number of ways that he can be used, which is just as important.
And I think, you know, I've said this a couple times, but it was evident again last night. It's not that he has a great handle or great, like, highlight moves, but he's just so effective because he's so tall that the little step backs, the little just around you dribbles, he's very good at those. And I think that's part of it too, where people look at it and say, oh, 80% of his shots are assisted, so don't worry about this or that. And then when you don't worry about his drives, he drives right around you and gets to the rim. I am curious going forward though, he's starting to get more and more attention. I mean, he's averaging like 25 points or something over the last 10. I wonder if what the scout looks like. And especially in a playoff series, you go up against the same defender 5-6 times in a row, maybe 7 times in a row. I am curious if guys are able to solve certain aspects of his game, or if maybe he's just this good at scoring that there is no solving him. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be an interesting question, and it'll be interesting to find what those solutions are in the playoffs. And like, he'll probably find a matchup that's tough for him. Like, that's likely. And then if that happens, then it'll be something for him to learn and adapt to. Like, that's part of the process as well. To give you a sense of how big this win was, because I really got to stress, I'll go ahead and tell you, like, I didn't think it was impossible that they could win. I thought it was unlikely that they would win. Clippers motivated, tiebreaker on the line. I wasn't surprised when Kawhi was a late addition. Like Nuggets, you know, this was one where it's like, okay, you really need Murray to be able to carry the offense, and nope. But I did kind of pencil this one in, and the ramifications are pretty fascinating. So with the win, the Nuggets win tiebreaker and go one up on the Clippers in the loss column. So that's basically a 2-game lead for third. It also puts them 6 games in the loss column above the Los Angeles Lakers, who, as you and I record this on Sunday night, are currently 14 points down with 6:29 to go versus the Toronto Raptors. So that's one to keep an eye on. They're not going to get out. The Lakers will not get 6 more wins than the Nuggets.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. Just about a lock for top four seed. Yep.
Yeah. So that's pretty much locked. Most of the projections are going to continue to have the Clippers finishing with the third seed. The reason you're going to see a lot of those is even with the tiebreaker, it's based off of the strength of schedule, right? So we just assume that if you're on the road versus a team with a better record, like they face the Jazz and they face the Nets, those are automatically going to be ascribed as losses. And we're doing on Action Network, we're putting the one together, and it has the Nuggets at like 46% to finish with the fourth seed. And so like, that's the highest probability of all of them, is that they're very likely to finish fourth. I don't know that that's the case, especially because if you're the Clippers, you have the Lakers on Thursday, you took your shot versus the Nuggets and you didn't get it. At some point, you're probably like, okay, like, yeah, you took your shot, you couldn't get there. If you lose to the Lakers on Thursday, which definitely isn't a likelihood given how the Lakers have played recently, but there's probably a point where the Clippers concede. If they're two back in the loss column with 5 games to go, I don't know that the Clippers are going to bear down and try and catch. Now, that's what makes this next week so fascinating, is they've got the Nuggets have Lakers, Knicks, Jazz, Nets. Yeah. Yep. They got the win versus the Clippers, which I said they needed to go really, they needed to go like 2 and 3
right
in this stretch. They already got one. So, yeah. So like now they can, you know, if they get one more win through any of these games, they get 2 more, it's golden. If you're curious about going higher, that's pretty tough. There's 8 games left and they're back 3 on the Jazz and Suns. If they were to beat the Lakers and then beat the Jazz, obviously that cuts them back 2, but
still tough. Yeah.
The Jazz are bleeding. I will say that the Jazz are bleeding without Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley.
And also we're seeing, I mean, you're talking about the Lakers right now, who look like they're going to lose to the Raptors as we record this. Only about 5 minutes left. They're down double figures, but we're seeing it. Guys miss time and come back. And it's not like, oh, they're back. Game one, we're good to go. And Donovan Mitchell being out now for as long as he has probably fits that at least a little bit, maybe not to the degree that AD and LeBron have looked rusty, but still to some degree. And so maybe they hobble past the finish line. But the thing, and we've talked about this before, but it's now, I think, a lock. The Clippers have to decide between playing hard every night and trying to go for the 3 seed or resting and punting games, because they do have a back-to-back, not the last game of the season, but the second and third to last games. They are back-to-back. And in all likelihood, those games will matter, which means they will have to play their guys during those games.
So this is the good news, is that there's a very good chance that the Nuggets – get past and get into the 2-3 matchup, which is probably better. Here's the bad news. The Lakers loss is actually not great for Denver. And here's why. If the Lakers were to lose tonight, which again, we'll probably have an update for you before we get off this podcast, up 14 with 4:25 left, then they fall into a 3-way tie with Blazers and Mavericks. If those three finish out in a tie and the Lakers beat the Blazers on Friday, then the Lakers would finish as the 6th seed. That's probably the biggest game that you guys want to circle. If you are like most Nuggets fan and don't want to face the Lakers in the first round, which is a totally reasonable feeling. You need to circle that the Lakers play Thursday versus the Clippers. That's not the one. Circle that Blazers game on Friday. That is the one for you to keep an eye on. If the Blazers win that game, I'm not saying that it's likely. I would say that there's a pretty decent chance that the Los Angeles Lakers are going to be in the play-in tournament, which I did not think was possible.
Denver plays Portland the last game of the year, which I love that there's a chance that punting that game might force the Lakers into the play-in. Very, very good real chance. I'm watching this Lakers team, and I've watched now both of their games since, you know, LeBron and AD have been back, and they just do not they look to me like a team that is going to struggle for a while. I do think they have a chance to be back to full strength during the playoffs, and you know, there will be a game or two where it clicks, but they are not, to me, a feel-good quarter away from being back. They're a grind. They have a process ahead of them.
Can I ask you, I want to ask you this question. Is this Clipper, where does this Clippers game rank? And we'd have to, I am looking at the scores now. Where does this Clippers game rank in terms of the best wins of the season?
I mean, it's up there. It's up there. I don't know if you can say number one. You know, there's been a handful. I'd have to really look at it, but to me, it was a very meaningful one just because it continued this this game and the previous one. To me, I went back and watched them. They weren't luck. They weren't, oh, a team underestimated you or this or that. It was no. Denver moves the ball really well. They have guys that play their role well. They play hard defensively. They're on a string. And this is one of the questions I have. Denver's playing playoff defense right now, in my opinion, meaning guys are making complex rotations and reads and communicating. And so that to me is what's the most impressive, is that Denver looks like they are ready for the playoffs to begin.
They are. I mean, I'll also say this. Did you expect Jokic to play at the level that he has this entire season?
No. I mean, he's the MVP. I would not have guessed he was. I don't know that I would have guessed he would have won an MVP. But I mean, the fact that he has not just an MVP, but last night, one of the things that was so cool, you know, I only follow writers on the timeline, like NBA writers. The narrative now is, should he be the unanimous MVP? I really do feel like the tide's turned to where given that he's the
MVP. I'll go ahead and say, I will use the phrase, to borrow it from a famous politics writer, I have seen enough. Last night removed any doubt. You're not going to be able, like, you can, even if, like, there is no scenario. Nikola Jokic is your 2021 National Basketball Association Most Valuable Player of the Year.
And he's gaining confidence too. I mean, last night I put this out on Twitter, the Nuggets still going to have the best player in almost any playoff series. You know, I still have just too much respect for LeBron and what he's done. Until somebody dethrones him, like, I'm still going to say he's going to be the best player in any series. And you look at Brooklyn, you know, Kevin Durant, whatever, but shy of that, and including the Clippers, you put this out last night too. How many times do we have to see LeBron look like the best player on the court against that team before we just say, hey, he's the best player in that series?
Jokic, yeah.
So I don't know. He's playing better than I thought, if that's what you're
asking. Let's go through it. I want to do this. I'll go to the team list. If it's Mavericks, Luka's great. Luka's great. Jokic is better.
Yep.
Clippers, we've seen it.
Yep. Doesn't mean Denver's going to win the series. It just means that I have, in my opinion, the best player.
Phoenix.
Yes.
No question. Utah. No question. Lakers is the only team. Just because of LeBron.
The LeBron we have right now, maybe not. But
And even then, like, LeBron is literally either the greatest or second greatest player of all time.
Right.
Like, it'll be really interesting to see this playoff run and next year's, like, I'm starting to, like, really be like, wait, what's this going to look like? Like, where is Jokic going to be in terms of, like, basketball? Oh, when this is through, like, this is nuts. Like, it was one thing when it was like, okay, he could be, you know, one of the better players in the league. Okay. He'd be one of the best players in the league. Okay. Right. He could, you know, you can make an argument for him for top 10. And now I'm like, look, man, you can't. Most of the guys that dominate in the regular season, like, I love James Harden. I've always loved the way James Harden plays. As much as he drives everyone crazy, the little stuff about him, I love. Harden does not have Jokic's playoff resume. He just doesn't. He just absolutely does not. And so, like, it's crazy for how successful he is in absolutely everything, to do it so effortlessly and to do it with a genuine sense of humility and lack of ego. Is this real? It's crazy. Like, is this real? Like, where does this, you know, how could you have possibly envisioned this coming in Denver? I mean, it's gonna be really crazy when Aaron Rodgers is traded to the Broncos and he's not the best passer in town. It's gonna be crazy. Like,
not even an exaggeration. I do think on the last segment, I want to talk, because one of the things that I like about this version of the Nuggets is how much the entire team trusts and relies on him. And I think it's a double-edged sword. In the playoffs, you like to have a second guy that you can 100% rely on. But right now, I think part of why the team is humming is, more than ever, he touches it every single time down court.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about that question, and we'll talk about some final things as we wrap up an absolutely incredible Nuggets win and insane and crazy Nuggets season. We'll be back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, gotta tell you about Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at Bet Online. This week has tons of sports action on the go. You've got NBA, MLB, NHL, all of that. You get all the latest news, odds, and info that you need, plus all of your UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to Bet Online on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Today's show is also brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a great tasting, delicious protein bar that's full of nutrition, covered in 100% chocolate. So many great flavors. I can't even list them all. They're great if you're trying to be health conscious. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. If you look at the coconut almond bar, 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and only 5 grams of net carbs. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15. And you'll get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. All right, Adam, you have a very interesting question, I feel like, to put before our show right now.
I don't like the question, because I think it can really be misinterpreted and go the wrong direction, because obviously this team misses Jamal Murray and will miss him in the playoffs. But what has happened with the guys that they have available to them? They don't have a Murray facsimile, so they have to be completely different. And they are different in the way that if you go down this roster and you just look at who do they have? PJ Dozier, a defender. Campazzo, a defender. Aaron Gordon, a defender. Millsap and Jamichael Green and Shaq Harrison and even Austin Rivers. I'm kind of surprised by it, but he's been playing fantastic defense. They're all defensive players. And I always think back to Jonathan Charks' article from a few years back where he compared Dirk and Jokic and said Dirk had all these offensive teams around him and all these pieces that fit him offensively, but it wasn't until they just relied on him on offense and put nothing but defenders around him that they won the title. And I wonder if there is something to this. Is defense around Jokic the key? And you can just trust Jokic to score 110 points for you one way or another, but put defense around him and you'll win.
It's a really good question. I will say a couple of things to put it in perspective. So first of all, shout out to Sharks. Who's right. Going through cancer, and everybody's thinking of him, and you can follow you can check out more on his Twitter feed for ways to help him. But one thing I think that should be noted is, look, the 2007 Mavericks were badass. They were really good. They ran into the worst matchup imaginable. Like that Warriors team.
Oh yeah.
That Warriors team was just like out of their mind in terms of that matchup and momentum, and Avery Johnson really, I think, was actually a surprisingly good coach and lost to history, but
I think 2004 to 2011, the way you analyze those series in hindsight, knowing the way the game evolved, is so interesting, because that Golden State team was like ahead of the curve and nobody knew it.
Yeah. Don Nelson was really ahead. There are two guys that I think are more responsible for the changes than anything and won't get enough credit. It's Mike D'Antoni, who the Warriors credited after they won in 2015, and Don Nelson, who had a lot of these same ideas. I think that there were a lot of really badass Mavericks teams that just, for whatever reason, like some of them lost to great Spurs teams or got knocked off by Suns teams that really should have won a championship, those kind of things. I do think it's interesting to compare the idea. And I want to note, like, Torrey Craig is playing great for Phoenix right now. Like, right. Really is. But the difference in having a player that's maybe one-dimensional, like, that's maybe the biggest adjustment that the Nuggets made year over year. And early in the year, like, we really didn't like the roster for a lot of, like, pretty good reasons. The roster's also, like, a lot different now, right? It's like,
so different.
Yeah, and a lot of that's Michael Porter Jr.'s ascendance. But here, I will say this, like, Aaron Gordon is bringing something to the team that I don't think necessarily is translating into production, but his presence on the court, I do think helps. And I think it is making them better. I also think that, like, guys like PJ Dozier,
the record since they got him is like 18-2. So it would be very difficult to argue otherwise.
Yeah. But it's easy to be like, well, it's not him, because look at, he's not, you know, he's not shooting well or scoring. It's just like, it's just MPJ and Jokic. Because that's like, that's the limitation of the box score.
Yep. Totally.
But I do think that there's something fundamental. Like, I notice the guys just play, like, the team plays really well when he's on the court. If you look at PJ Dozier, I think that he's a more versatile defensive player. Shaq Harrison is a pretty limited offensive player, but I like the way that he's able to attack the rim. Austin Rivers has brought them a lot, like 1-for-7 from the field last night in the plus 22.
Right.
But there has also been big moments there. Campazzo has played a part in this as well. I do not want to overlook him. He has been great in the stretch. I think that he has played great basketball over the last couple of weeks. And then Millsap, like, being able to bring what he has. I do think that there's probably, like, a limit, right? Like, I think you can't go too – this is what's interesting. I think if you had better defenders who were worse offensively, it wouldn't work. Does that make sense?
Well, can I say – I'm going to – it does, but I'm going to change what you're saying. It's not about worse offensively. Here's the second half of it, because you have Campazzo and Shaq Harrison, like, the guys that can – I think are just locked in defensively. So they just are always playing at 100% on defense. But offensively, what they bring – that I think it is meaningful. Dribble penetration. They're so quick. Austin Rivers, Shaq Harrison, you know, even Dozier and Campazzo, those guys can collapse a defense. And think about Jokic ball. It's all about getting the ball moving to collapse the defense. Nobody can blow past. So we have to pass quickly. And that's how the defense gets scrambled. These guys, even Shaq Harrison, can break down a defense just off of the dribble. And when you have multiple guys like that, and then the ball finds Jokic, then it's over.
So I think that there's value in having, here's the other thing I'll say. You have to have great defensive guards. That, I think, is what I would lean to more towards anything.
Totally.
Is that you need to have great defensive guards, which it kind of sucks, because, like, I feel like Gary Harris was a great defensive guard the last couple of years. Like, he was an absolutely great defensive guard.
Length matters here too. Like, Shaq Harrison is very long, and so is Dozier. I mean, obviously.
And athletic.
And this is partly where I wonder about Monte. You know, Campazzo is one small guard, but does a second small guard, you gain a little offense or shooting, but do you lose? I mean, who sits? Yeah. Rivers has been so good at getting into the paint, and Shaq Harrison has been so elite defensively. I don't know. It's an interesting question, to be honest.
I will say this. I think there's still the offensive numbers are still good every night. And I think that a lot of this is, like, you don't want to go too far in one direction. And that's going to be, like, a hard sell for Malone, right? Like, here's what's really crazy is they're having this amazing run. This is like the dream Malone ball.
Right. It's right? True.
Like, two guys are doing the majority.
Barton and Monte are going to slot right back in.
It's
what Malone wants.
So, resident internet Will Barton defender here, as I am always battling people about it. But look, Will's defense is not good. It's just not. I think there are games where he plays with good effort. I like Will Barton if it's like ISO. I like those situations. If he's having to close out, recover, and then contain, which he almost always is, it's bad.
I'm worried about Will Barton, Matt.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm worried about his return.
I would be too.
There's nobody on the roster right now that I feel comfortable with him replacing all of their minutes.
But I will also say this, as good as this run has been, right? We still have had games like the Pelicans game that got way too close for comfort.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Oh, down the stretch. Absolutely.
That's the thing, is like, you don't need Will Barton until you do. And then you really need Will Barton just to be able to, like, give you a little bit of bump. And so look, it's, I think it's better to have more weapons. I also will say, I do think, like, I will continue to be curious. I'm willing to be wrong about this. Maybe teams can't target Faku. Maybe that's just not possible. I'm open to that possibility, right? I'm not going to sit here and say, no, like, you can't play him. I'm not going to say that. Like, he's played well enough to earn that respect. Wow. I think it's an open question, and I want to see what happens, right? Because it can go very badly, or it can go fine. If teams are just like, no, we're not going to go at him, then I think you can survive it. If they try and go at him and he's pesky enough and the coaches are like, no, let's not do that. He's too good of a defender. Then you win that matchup too. Like, these are the little chess matches that go on in a series. But what's crazy is the Nuggets have lost their second best player, a max contract player that scored 50 points twice in a series in last year's playoffs. And I cannot say definitively that they do not have a chance at the Western Conference Finals.
Crazy. I'm with you. Lakers, by the way, just lost.
Lakers have lost, so they fall into a three-way tie, and
Jokic gonna foul out in about 10 minutes tomorrow night, Matt. No. Adam Silver's not letting the Lakers fall to the play-in.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen. I would say that there's a very good chance that Jokic does foul out tomorrow. It's don't be surprised if that one is a little bit less. So enjoy this episode. And we will be back tomorrow with another episode after the Lakers game to give you the wrap-up on that. By the way, LeBron James exited the game late and did not return. I'm up there. Keep an eye on that. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nuggets. Get your questions ready for Friday for the Locked On Friday mailbag on Locker Room. Make sure to check out all of Adam's work and his crew over at DNVR. Download the Action Network app from my guys over at Action Network. And we'll talk to you guys again tomorrow with another edition of Locked On Nuggets.